the big digital camera show. We've done home automation. We are now going to talk with Karen and Bob, who will do the AI corner for us. Karen and Bob are the AI folks over at Notebook LM, and we're going to have them deep dive into topics that Dennis and I pick every program, and we'll talk about it after they do their deep dive. Their deep dives are typically 7 minutes long. We can't do that until we get back to our commercial-free options, which I'm working on as hard as I can. But for now, we'll have these like kind of shortened flavors of their deep dives, and we'll have Carolyn kick off my topic first, and then we'll get into Dennis's next. But let's go first with my Karen and Bob deep dive into mood improvements. Go ahead, Carolyn.
You know, when we think about things that can boost our mood, like really give us a little lift, Power Wash Simulator doesn't exactly come to mind right away, does it?
You're right about that. I mean, usually we think about going for a walk out in nature or listening to our favorite music or maybe even like a nice piece of chocolate. But this new study out of Oxford University, this is what makes it so interesting.
It really
It
does.
really challenges what we think we know about what kinds of games can actually make us feel good.
Yeah, a lot of you have been asking us to dive into how video games affect our moods. And this research, it really kind of throws a wrench into like all of our initial assumptions. They went really deep into Power Wash Simulator. You know, the game where you just like blast away grime virtually to see how it actually impacts players' moods.
And it's not like they just grabbed like 20 college students and threw them in a lab for an hour. You know, we're talking data from over 8,500 players. And not in a lab setting either. This was real gameplay data from 39 different countries.
So a global grime-fighting force. We are talking huge amounts of data, over 67,000 gaming sessions.
Can you imagine?
That's wild.
And it's not even just tracking how long they played. They collected mood reports while they were playing the game, over 162,000 in-game mood reports.
Okay, so we've got all these people virtually power washing and telling researchers about their mood. So what'd they find?
Okay, so here's the big thing. They actually reported that their mood got better while they were playing compared to how they felt right before they started playing.
So something about that virtual power washer just washes away your worries, huh?
That's what it seems like. Now, the actual average mood boost they saw was 0.034 on a scale of 0 to 1.
Okay.
Which.
I'll admit, when I hear a decimal point like that, my eyes start to glaze over a little.
I hear you. I hear you. But it might sound small. But what's interesting is that small of an increase is actually on par with how good people feel after doing things like reading, shopping, or even listening to music.
Really?
Activities that we already associate with enjoyment and relaxation.
So you're saying blasting away virtual dirt is right up there with like curling up with a good book.
That's what the research suggests. And here's another thing about this mood boost. It wasn't a gradual thing.
Okay.
Most of that boost in mood happened within the first 15 minutes of playing.
So it's like a quick fix. So you're saying in the time it takes me to wait for a takeout order, I could be on my way to a better mood by playing Power Wash Simulator.
You got it. And here's where they took it even further.
Okay.
Instead of just looking at that average mood boost across everyone, they wanted to see how it was affecting people individually.
So they like zoomed in a little bit.
Yeah.
How they do that?
They use something called statistical modeling, which is
That's
basically
insane.
using math to make more personalized predictions.
Okay.
And get this, they estimated that 72% of the players in the study likely felt their mood improve while they were playing.
Wait, 72%?
72%.
So like three quarters of players felt better after a session of what is that, digital cleaning? That's a lot. So we've got a lot of players saying they feel better after they play some Power Wash Simulator. But the big question is why? What is it about this game that seems to be giving people this mood boost?
Yeah, that's the real head scratcher, isn't it? We can see the data, but figuring out why it's happening, that's a little trickier. Now, this particular study didn't really get into the why for Power
All
Wash
right,
Simulator
Carolyn, you can pop
specifically,
that now.
but we can look at it alongside other research on mood.
So, is this not funny or what? I mean, are you there, Dennis?
I am here.
And
I
there
am
you are.
here.
So, when you just listen to to Karen and Bob talk about mood and how she's feeling and how she can feel better and he's scratching his head, these are not, these people don't exist.
Yeah, they aren't real people. They're
And it's
fake.
They're purely taking the information from the article that Dennis and I would take and doing their deep dive. And of course, they explain 75% like three different ways. You mean three quarters? You mean 75% is three quarters of those people? You mean really? they have these weird, you know, extra accents on the actual topic. It's kind of unusual, but it's so bizarre, right? So that is a true thing. Power washing plant using virtual power washing games. People waste their time on a video game that literally virtually power washes something and it makes them feel better, according to the virtual Karen and Bob reading this to you. So I just found it interesting and wanted to share that with you as one of our first AI Corner deep dives. You can do this too if you just use Notebook LM and feed it whatever you want. Karen and Bob will do their thing. So what did you come up with, Dennis? You want to see? Let's listen to her.
Mine deals with a little bit of AI and archaeology. Two things that go together, right?
Let's see what Karen and Bob have to say about that.
All right, so get ready to go deep, really deep on the Nazca lines. Because this isn't just about, like, you know, those cool animal shapes everyone's seen.
Yeah, no, you're right. This is where things get really, really fascinating. We're going to dig into how AI, artificial intelligence, is kind of blowing open how we understand these ancient wonders. It's out there in the Peruvian desert.
Like AI is giving us superpowers to see the past or something.
It kind of is. So we've got these three articles we're diving into, right? From Archaeology News, then there's the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, that's serious stuff, and even Smithsonian Magazine's gotten in on it. They're all talking about how this tech is finding hundreds of what they call geoglyphs, those old drawings, that nobody knew were there.
Hundreds, whoa! Okay, so were they like hidden, buried, what's the deal?
Think less about hidden, more like subtle. See, the Nazca lines everyone knows, the huge ones, they're made by scraping away those dark rocks on top of the desert, reveals the lighter dirt underneath. That was a big contract.
Okay, bold lines. You can spot them from a plane, yeah.
Exactly. Those are what we call line-type geoglyphs. But these new discoveries, they're totally different. They're called relief-type, and instead of digging down, they piled stuff up. Rocks, sediment, all arranged to make the shapes.
Oh, so way more delicate work. No wonder we missed them for so long. But if that hard to see, how's AI suddenly finding them?
Perspective and scale, that's the key. Human eye, even a trained one, it's great at patterns, but hundreds of square miles of desert. Even small differences just get lost. Now, AI's got the processing power, the sheer patience that we humans, we don't.
So we're like teaching a computer to see what we can't.
You got it. Researchers, they took known Nazca geoglyphs, both types, showed them to an AI model, like, trained it to recognize how the Nazca people made these designs. The specific way they arranged those rocks, that was the giveaway.
Then they just pointed this AI at the whole Nazca region.
Boom, unleashed it. High-resolution satellite images, the kind with insane detail, that's what the AI got. Mm-hmm. And because computers don't need sleep or coffee breaks, it scanned those images way faster, way more thoroughly, something like 20 times faster, actually.
No kidding. This research assistant is nonstop. So what happened? Did it actually find stuff?
Did it ever. Started flagging potential geoglyphs all over the place. Ones nobody had noticed before. Over 300 of them. That's almost double the Nazca lines we knew about. And get this. They're not just more of the same, these relief type ones. They're telling us a whole different story about the Nazca people.
Different how? Okay, now you got to give me the good stuff.
All right, so those famous line type geoglyphs, mm-hmm. they're mostly those big animals, right? These smaller ones, the relief type, way more variety. We're talking figures that look like people, depictions of their llamas. They're called camelids, by the way. And even like scenes. Could be showing their everyday activities, maybe even ceremonies, who knows?
That's wild. It's like we're peeking into their daily lives all of a sudden, not just their big artistic statements.
Thanks, Carolyn.
And maybe, just maybe, their beliefs too. See, one of the most fascinating discoveries,
so
it's
Carolyn,
a relief type geoglyph.
Pop that down? She's enjoying it, I think.
Well, I was too.
Yeah, so I mean, when Karen says we humans, they're not humans.
They aren't.
But they do such a great job of describing this particular topic. You inputted three different sources.
Yes.
And we got this great information about these geoglyphs and how AI, so we had AI describe about how AI was used to find these things because we can't see it as humans. And right, coffee breaks, You know, you just think about what was happening on the docks, right, where they were threatening to shut down our economy because of automation, and they don't want any kind of automation. I'm sorry, folks. We need it.
Yeah.
You know, look at what happened when they did this. They found all this information because they don't require coffee breaks, and you can just sick the AI on it. Imagine if you could have an AI crane operator unload a barge and put it on a truck.
Well,
it's probably doable.
The backstory of that is that a lot of these high-resolution satellite photos of the Nazca plane, we've had them for years and years and years. They've been sitting around doing nothing because people can't really use them. To find what we need to find, and the AI can.
It's truly amazing. I hope you guys enjoyed our first ever AI Corner with Karen and Bob, and we're going to have more of them. We'll have them fairly regularly, because why not have AI tell you about a topic the way Karen and Bob do? It's just lovely.
It is. It's excellent.
And we have to probably step off for a quick break.
And we have four lines wide open, so please call in.
That first commercial that Carolyn just played sounded like Karen, didn't she?
A little bit. Yeah.
I'm like, that sounds just like our Karen. I wonder if that's being used for all sorts of stuff.
Well, having done this little exercise makes me wonder about a lot of stuff.
Right. I mean, imagine voiceover work. You can just feed it and have the AI do the voiceover work.
That's right. And you can make it say exactly what you want it to say. You don't have to worry that a person is going to ad lib on you or crap out or anything like that. I mean, it's going to do exactly what you tell it to do. Nothing more, nothing less.
I mean, audiobooks too. I wonder if a lot of audiobooks, the folks had to read everything. Now you can just put your voice in, license your voice, your Morgan Freeman voice, and just have the AI read the book as Morgan Freeman with the breathing, with everything. You're give us back a lot of time. Those actors had to sit there and read those books. No, they don't have to. The AI can do it for you. And which is the promise of AI, right? AI is going to hopefully give us time back to do other things. I've seen people talk about AI, schedule your vacation for you or help you with your shopping list. Trying to do grocery shopping with my wife, just coming up with our list is a painful process. If AI could come in and say, hey, dude, you need some chicken. You buy this all the time. Why don't you just get this? It would be handy if I could come up with an AI shopping list thing and save a few minutes of, what do you want to eat this week? I don't know. What do you want to eat this week? The AI will tell us what we're having.
Right. It'll just program a meal plan for you. It looks like we have a call, April, nice, from East Hartford. Let's see if I can bring her up. April, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
And you could hear me.
Good morning.
I can. You get this, Dennis. You got this.
It only took me an hour and a half, but that's okay. What seems
that's
to be
okay.
going on?
That's short in a lifetime.
What seems to be going on?
Well, first off, I want to thank you guys, because yesterday we were celebrating. I got GoNetSpeed installed.
Nice.
So I'm excited about it because I haven't had internet in a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Frontier just decided in the middle of the night, in the middle of me writing a report, that they were going to shut me off. So they just did. So they just shut it off. And so we've been fighting back because I had DSL for a lot of reasons. But anyway, so they just shut it off. So we've been going back and forth, and I finally just said, you know what, we're going to bite the bullet. I'm done. And
good,
so that's that. So we have GoNetSpeed, and I'm very excited about it. But in the process, I've been using my phone. So you're going to have to holler at me for several things.
Mm.
I'm still running Windows 7.
Wow.
Because I can't figure out how to update it. I have a pretty powerful computer that's run. It's a laptop. It's running great. It's the only computer I own. I'm not tech savvy. I don't even own a television set, so we're going to go from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I got an error message. I can't send emails. And I think I got hacked, and I'm not sure because, like I said, I've been doing everything on my phone, which is really difficult to see. And I got an email from myself the other day, and I voided it. It went into my spam file, and then I looked at it. It looked like it was something that I should, because I was waiting for an email. I had sent a photo of myself. I won a pie baking contest, and I wanted the picture.
Yeah.
So I get it. I sent it to myself, and when I waited for the email, when it came up, it went into my spam folder, and I just went and found it, and it looked correct, so I released it. Mm-hmm. And then it said, bing, you've been hacked. Well, now I can't send emails, and I don't know it. All of this going on at once with the new GoNet speed, and I'm using Thunderbird. I go through port 1.
All right.
For my internet, so I'm using Thunderbird. But the error message says, it says sending of the message failed. An error occurred while sending mail. Outgoing server SMTP error. The server responded. Administrative prohibition.
Oh. Okay. Then I would contact your email provider. Call in. You've got full board ready to take your call. In the meantime, we're going to talk about a little event that happened in the world of banking.
Yeah, it was pretty weird, huh?
Yeah. A bunch of people were using Bank of America online banking services in the web or in apps. And they would log in and they'd be told their balances were zero or hash marks or something like that. Isn't that wonderful?
That'll freak you out.
Yeah. Apparently, a lot of people did get freaked out. But I guess they resolved the problem shortly. But I mean, that's scary stuff. I mean, it's one thing for like the app to just be broken or the website to be down. You can't even log in. But people could log in. They could connect with Bank of America systems, but they were told they had no money. That would be panic making to me.
Yeah. Luckily, they were able to call and the number. Yeah. They'd call the old-fashioned phone number, and it would give them their balance.
Right. And the people inside the bank had the right balances. It was just the outbound banking systems that were affected by whatever happened. They didn't really explain what happened, but they got it fixed. So,
to me, doesn't it feel like there's multiple sources of this information? So the Bank of America systems had the balances, but the app didn't. So it sounds like the app, when you're getting your data, must not get it from that banking system, or the API that would be feeding that app might have gotten broken in some way. So it wasn't updating the app balances.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking happened. There was a conduit between the outward-facing systems and the inward-facing systems that wasn't really there.
Yeah.
And that's how, well, to be honest with you, it sounds like a unnecessarily complicated arrangement, but it's actually beneficial for everybody's security to have separated systems, you know, just systems that are internal to their networks, and then an outward-facing system that does talk to the internet. And it's probably that connection in between that was broken for some reason.
Yeah, made the news and obviously freaked people out. So again, that wasn't any kind of major run or anything like that occurred. It was just a little unsettling for people at Bank of America.
Yep.
In other news, about 250,000 Comcast subscribers had their data stolen from a debt collector. Did you see that?
Oh, that does not sound good.
No. Comcast says data on 237,000 of its customers was, in fact, stolen in a cybersecurity attack on the debt collector it was using. Now, contrary to previous assurances it was given that it was unaffected by that intrusion. Now, we've heard that a bazillion times. Oh, we've had some sort of incident, but no data has been infected. No, but no, you know, think about Columbus, Ohio, right? No.
Oh, I would. That immediately came to mind. Yeah, yeah, we had a breach, but all of the data was either unusable or encrypted.
Right. Uh-huh. So in this case, the financial agency is called the Financial Business and Consumer Solutions. Really? FBCS was compromised in February. And according to a filing with Maine's attorney general, that attorney general, man, they've got something going in Maine because
they do.
They're the only state that requires this. that the firm informed the U.S. cable giant about the unauthorized access in March. So nothing, you know, they said nothing happened, no information was affected. Now, of course, that changed in July when the collections outfit got in touch with the giant again, Comcast, and to say, hey, guys, sorry, all your consumer subscriber data was pilfered. So among the type of data that was stolen, names, addresses, social security numbers, dates of birth, the Comcast account numbers and ID numbers used within FBCS. So now it's a little late, right? Cat's out of the bag,
yeah.
Horses out of the barn, wherever you want to say. FBCS earlier said more than 4 million people had their records accessed during the February break-in. So this was just one of their customers, Comcast. So if FBCS said 4 million accounts were impacted back in February and Comcast had 200 and some odd thousand of them that they're saying they actually got access to the data, it looks like they have, you know, 3.7 more million people to contact that were in other stories that we'll have to talk about as well.
Yeah, that's immediately what came to mind when I saw this. You know, if it's just Comcast that has, you know, 250,000, what about other clients that this collection company has? They have to be affected too, whoever they are.
And so basically there's nobody who claimed the ransom. Nobody ever stepped up. So almost could have been like just an inside company looking to steal this data because nobody ever really went after the any kind of ransom. They just stole the data. So that means they were interested, kind of like the other guy we talked about earlier, where they were looking at insider trading. They want the data to do something with it.
Right, right. They want to take it and then use it elsewhere.
Which won't be fun for any of us who were part of that breach. And who knows if you were, right? Who knows who else uses the FBCS? So if you're paying your bills with whatever service you use, you're good. But if you happen to be late and they use this collection agency, your data might be pilfered. And who knows what's going to happen with that. So,
and this is also an example of how business relationships essentially expand your security footprint. Mm-hmm. You think that everything is secure, but it's not. And you have this relationship with another company and you give them your data for whatever reason that they need it. Well, now that data is out there in another spot and it can be compromised there. And that's what happened in this case. So a lot of companies need to start rethinking how that works. At least as far as I'm concerned, maybe what Comcast could have done was to keep the data housed within their systems, but then had some kind of an outward facing system that connected with this collection agency. And the collection agency just gets the data for the customer that the person maybe is talking to on the phone at the moment and nothing else, so that data isn't all housed somewhere else, you know, in that expanded footprint. Instead, a scammer or a hacker could only compromise, you know, one account at a time instead of all of them, you know?
Yep. Lots of rethinking to do. Obviously, again, none of these relationships seem to be set up with security in mind or anything in mind. They're like, oh, okay, we have all these customers that we want you to go ahead and collect on. And, I guess obviously those customers that don't pay their bills, I guess, are the least of their concern, right?
Well, sure. Yeah, you know, I mean,
you're not going to pay my bill. Why do I care about your security?
Well, I'm sure there's some of that thinking in there. So,
yeah, I mean, even happens in the world that we're in with managed service providers. You know, we hear horror stories of customers that we picked up that were serviced by other managed service providers who said, you know what, you're not paying your bill, I'm just shutting all your services off.
No.
Yeah. So that kind of forces that bill to get paid and doesn't have to go to that collection agency. It's like, oh, wait a minute, you're turning off my services? I guess I have to pay you. But there's a lot of that goes on in our world that we see, you know, MSPs doing this to all sorts of businesses. Even if you want to leave them, they'll hold that data hostage before you pay any back they're not going to give you your own passwords to your own systems before you pay any back payments. So I guess you're going to be safe from this type of thing occurring to you from MSP, because they're going to make you pay your bills. If you don't, they're going to shut you off. That's also an issue with the cloud too. If you don't pay your bills, they're going to be like, okay, no more cloud for you.
Right.
So in this case, it's just internet. We had the other caller too, who had her DSL shut off. Now, I'm sure it wasn't due to lack of payment. It was because Frontier got out of the business.
Right. Yeah. They probably just disconnected that service in her town.
Right. And said, sorry, we don't care to have you as a DSL customer. Go find something else. She's definitely made a better choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the difference between DSL and fiber is night and day.
Yeah. So she'll definitely enjoy that. Any callers right now?
We just got a call aboard. DJ from Essex. Let's see what's going on with him or her.
Hear me?
DJ.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you can hear me fine.
Woo! Okay. What seems to be going on?
So I provide a service for a nonprofit company where I try to take donated laptops that are typically 10 years old or so, and I try to revive them so that they can be used as part of a lending library, if you will. I've had a lot of success just simply by doing things like replacing the hard drive with solid state and adding more memory and cleaning the hard drive and stuff like that. So I've really been able to do some good work, but I'm faced right now with a laptop that I'm not sure whether I should get involved with or not. And I just wanted to ask you, because this is information that I'll be able to use going forward too. Mm-hmm. This is an old Acer laptop. It's probably less than 10 years old, but it was not, I think it's an i3.
Ooh.
But what happens is when I start to try to boot it up, I get the BIOS screen, I get the Acer logo. And once or twice, I've actually gotten it to start to log into Windows, but typically, it doesn't even get there. It just literally just dies, and then it puts me into repair mode. So how can I figure out whether it's worth my time? Because I know if it's up and running, it's going to be worth it to have this as a computer, but it was my brother's, actually, and it just... He doesn't know diddly about computers. He already went and bought another one and gave me this one.
Well, what I would do is I would try to get into its own boot time diagnostics and then see if there is any kind of a hardware fault. Just have it run the table of tests that it can do on the hardware and just see what it tells you. It might find a problem. It might find a problem with memory. I'm thinking RAM might be bad, or you could have a hard drive controller problem, something else on the motherboard. I'm just thinking it might be hardware, and that would be the first thing that I would do.
How do I get into that diagnostic?
You'd have to get into the boot menu for the laptop. Okay. And
so the BIOS, like the F2 or whatever.
Yeah, you'd have to hit F2 or F10 or whatever it happens to be for this model. And once you get into that boot menu, then you should be able to...
possibly.
It could be F12 also, yeah. Mm-hmm. But whichever option you take, get into the boot menu, and you should be able to run a diagnostic from there.
Okay, I don't think I ever saw that before. Cool.
Barring that, you may have to download from Acer's website a bootable diagnostic stick. And then just boot directly to that. There might be something available on their website.
Okay, so use Rufus or something to make a bootable thumb drive and download it.
Yeah, okay. Matter of fact, they might even have their own tool to write the bootable drive. I haven't really worked with Acer too much. Dell makes something like that available where you just run a program and it builds the bootable stick.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much.
All right.
So,
all right.
I
think we want to talk with John from East Longmeadow.
Great.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Morning.
A simple problem for you guys, I'm quite sure, and you've probably answered it a dozen times over the years, but it didn't pertain to me at the time, but now it does. I'm just trying to back up to a memory stick from my backup, a bunch of pictures off my phone to the memory stick.
Okay.
I can do a file explorer, and it shows my phone, you know, in the screen, but when I click on it, it says there's nothing there. What do I have to do to make the phone?
Well, you might have to, there might be a notification on the cell phone asking you what to do with your USB connection.
Right.
It may be, because the phone, you need to tell the phone to talk to the computer. And
right.
You've got to look for something to prompt you. What kind of phone is it? iPhone, Android?
It's an Android. It's a Pixel 7a, I think it is.
Okay. Yeah, I think you got to go until that, turn that USB stick
Hello?
Into some sort of mode.
Yep. Oh,
he can't hear me again.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, John. Eric was talking, and I don't think he can hear you.
I don't hear him.
Oh, sorry about that. At any rate, you have to tell the phone to talk to the computer.
Okay, I'll fish around for it. Very good. Thank you much. And again, thank you for being there. You guys are, quite a resource. Okay, well, remember, stay out of trouble or have fun. Thank you.
We'll try.
You got it. I'll find the Bye-bye. Link for him to put out there for that.
Yeah, we can provide a link for him. And we have no callers on the board. If you wanted a call, go ahead.
All right, we're here till 11 o'clock. But yeah, basically, you're going to plug that. You there, Dennis?
I am.
Oh, good. Just make sure you're there. I heard a big click.
No.
I'm like, oh, she hung up on me.
I was right here.
So basically, yeah, you want to turn that phone in. You got to tell it that it's going to be a USB configuration. You got to go like developer options and unhide them and then go to settings and connect it that way. But I'll try to find a good link for that so we can copy his pictures. And it's a good idea to copy your pictures. If you're not going to configure the backup till it goes to Google, then you have to do your backup yourself, or if that phone dies, you're going to lose everything.
That's right.
And when these things die, man, they die hard.
That's true. Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot more things on that smartphone than you were even thinking of, and it can really affect you badly if you can't get to it.
But as we're waiting for calls, do you want to bring up anything?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about a town in North Carolina. That it has been badly affected by Hurricane Helene. It happens to be the source for some particularly pure quartz that is used in the production of semiconductors. And apparently it's used worldwide to create semiconductors, and it's uniquely pure. That's why this one town in North Carolina has all of that quartz, and they are shut down because the town itself is, you know, inaccessible or almost inaccessible, and it's going to hinder semiconductor production for quite a while.
And that's what we need.
Yeah, we need that. So look for supply chain problems. We have a couple of calls now. We have Bill from Newington. Let's see if we can't bring him on board. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Hey, all right. How are you guys?
We are doing fine.
We're good.
Great. 41 years in IT, and I retired, but I still can't figure out some of these iPhone things.
Okay. What's going on?
Well, I use CarPlay in my 2016 Chevy Silverado, and it disconnects regularly, even though I have a relatively brand new Apple wire. I've forgotten the device, reconnected.
Okay.
Talked to Apple, went to the Genius Bar, and still it does that on a regular basis. So it makes it difficult to use if I'm towing and can't get a good connection.
Oh.
All right. You got to make sure that your CarPlay isn't restricted. You might have set some restrictions. Are you hearing me?
Oh, what Eric was saying was that you have to check on your phone to see if CarPlay is restricted on it.
Okay.
So you might have set screen time and stuff.
But it's just over the years, it's gotten less of a good connection.
Well, you may have like a screen time restriction or something like that.
Okay, what time restriction?
Screen. Like when the lock screen gets invoked after it times out. That might be breaking your connection. And you'd have to go into CarPlay and get it to talk to the car, even if the phone is locked.
Okay, I'll check it out. If that doesn't do it, any other, what's the next thing?
Get an Android.
Eric just said, get an Android. I don't know if we need to go that far. But I would have thought that the geniuses could have helped you.
Well, they told me to reset all the settings, and if that didn't work, then they would... We would have to refresh the whole phone.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
That sounds a little bit extreme.
No, yeah, the screen, yeah, and, thank you.